We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Zach Zaidman and Tom Thayer on 670 The Score, a radio.com sports station.
Hey, pleasant good evening to you. It's the final hour of the program. Alongside 85 Bear Tom Thayer, I'm Zach Zaidman, broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. We're in for a treat. Joining us, in about 20, 25 minutes, will be comedian Tom Dreesen. And he will also be joined by the man we're introducing right now, joining us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. He just goes by the Coom Dog. You don't even need to explain his baseball career, what he does in the Cubs booth here on The Score. It's Ron Coomer. We consider him our sports friend and much more. Hey, Coom, how you doing on this Sunday?
I am doing great. I am very good, very excited to talk to you guys and to hear just what our guy Tommy has to say here in another half hour, right? We got the double Toms going today, but I mean, Tom Dreesen, for all of us who grew up in this city, he's like the icon of all icons. When he comes in the booth, it's like royalty has arrived. So what a special treat to be able to talk to Tommy Dreesen here later today. So thanks for having me on, boys. Happy Father's Day to everybody that is a father. And, I look forward to talking. Yeah, it's been a good day.
You know, I have a French bulldog, and everybody knows what they look like. If you was really a Coom Dog, what would he look like?
if it had to be – so there have been people – through the years that have sent pictures of their dog, like a cartoonish picture of Coom Dog, you know, and I was a twin and then broadcast near in Chicago. And it's always this big, mean looking, you know, bulldog kind of thing. And I'm like, dude, I grew up with Chihuahuas.
But that is true, by the way.
That is true. I did. I grew up with Chihuahuas. And then I had a Boston Terrier at one time. But, I mean, I grew up with little dogs. But, I remember walking to a Lockport football game, Tommy. I was playing in the big leagues. And, you know, my family was living down the street from Lockport High School. And I went to a Friday night football game, and I brought the Chihuahua. And that was a big hit at the old Porterville, I'll tell you that.
What was the name of the Chihuahua?
Bubba.
Bubba?
Bubba.
Well, yep. That's, yeah, I, you know, I, that's just like naming the smallest dog, giving it the toughest name.
This dog lived so long, I thought we plugged it in at night just to keep it alive. I swear to God, it was unbelievable. But I'm a big dog lover, but yeah, I've had a few cartoons. Usually they hit the circular file after I get them because they're not very flattering, but it is what it is. They don't have much to work with, some of these people.
I love it. All right, let's get to the serious business of baseball because the latest today, Coom, as I'm sure you've seen, yep. According to Jeff Passan, MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred sent a letter to Tony Clark, the head of the Players Association, offering to cancel expanded playoffs and universal DH for 2021 if a full season isn't played in 2020. Players are concerned about giving up leverage of playoffs for naught. It's considered an olive branch, Coombe, and it may be the last and best chance MLB and MLBPA have to strike a deal, according to ESPN. Players had planned on voting today whether to accept a 60-game season or allow Manfred to impose a season of his desired length. So what do you make of that?
Well, to be honest with you, I don't really know. I don't know how the players are going to take that. The expanded playoffs, you know, so it kind of goes back to the old way of next year, at least somewhat. To me, the expanded playoff, I actually kind of like it for this year. I think it gives our game, you know, something different to look at and expands things. I understand the players look at it where, you know, you're shrinking our season, but you're expanding the revenue source for yourself. So, you know, that was, you know, a source for a little heartburn. At this point, I really believe for both sides, and this breakout in Florida that happened right where I was at in Clearwater and some of the places down there, Dunedin too, where Toronto was at, there's, you know, a pretty bad breakout of the virus. So I think everybody's a little scared now all of a sudden of, you know, not getting things started and doing it and worrying about this second wave. You know, we heard a lot about it, but we weren't sure if it's factual or, because nobody knows, right? I mean, and I was listening to you guys earlier, we just don't know. There's so much unknown. But I think this shook both sides a little bit. I actually think it kind of benefited the owners a little in the negotiation, if there is such thing. But I'm guessing now, because of all of this and this new breakout and all that, I would think that this is going to be a resolved deal by morning. That would be my take. Players can't vote against it, Tommy. I just don't think they can.
Well, I hope not. You know, I'm an optimist. I'm still here hoping sports go on. But I got to look at the opposite end of the spectrum, because I was thinking about this in terms of football. Because it's a physical, abusive game that you kind of have to stay active while you're in the game. If you get away from the game, it's hard to restart that motor. When I think of guys like Brady and Gronk and Philip Rivers that are moving to new teams that are at this age, that's, I don't know how much is expected of them. I don't think, if the NFL doesn't play this year, I don't know if they'll ever play again. What positions in baseball would be the most difficult to restart your motors if you were, let's just say, a year, just to round it out, a year's time away from the sport?
That's a great question. First of all, I would go to your point about football, and I would say the guys that are towards the tail end of their career, you miss a full season, you're done. You're just done. I remember when I retired, I was 37 years old. If I would have tried to come back at 38 after not playing a year, let's say my knee started feeling better and I could come back physically because my knee felt better, my game would have, there's no chance I could have played after being off for a year. There's no way. So I would say the veteran players first, the guys that are, you know, in their last couple years of their time in the big leagues, they're first. And then I got to believe some of the starting pitchers, the older, you know, maybe not older, but, you know, towards the later part of their career, not the end of their career, but, you know, I just think it would be tough. I don't know if Johnny Lester fits in that category because of his commitment to working out and is just his physical nature of the way he, you know, takes care of himself and all that. But I know there's going to be some guys that are a little older that, you know, have lost that desire to be in the weight room all the time, and that desire to go running day after day after day. That's really tough. I mean, when everything kind of hurts anyway, and then you got to try to get back on that horse again after spring. If we don't play this year, that spot, I think, is going to be tough. Guys' arms, you know, they just don't bounce back, and if they lose that elasticity in their shoulder and their elbow, you know, I just don't know if they ever get back.
Is there a correlation between a strong throwing arm and a good swing? I mean, do you have to have both? Do you have to have equal strength? Because what my thing is what comes back, your arm or your bat? And do you have to have both in order them to work correctly?
I would say the swing itself, the correlation between the two would be core strength. Not necessarily arm strength, but core strength. When you're talking on a pitcher that's up in age, if he can keep his body and his core strong and flexible, he can still throw because he can get his arm in shape and still maintain. Same thing as a hitter. I thought the one thing that happened to me as I got older is my flexibility rotating around my spine changed. I wasn't able to finish my swing quite the way I did when I was younger, you know, and you're just not, you just can't quite get there. And I think that's what happens with golfers too. I think, first of all, I think for the pitchers, it's tougher in the fact that if you don't throw at that level for a year and you're older, I just think it's the arm, your shoulder, and your elbow, it gets put in such a compromising position that you're just asking for it to break down. You know, things just aren't recovering the way they used to.
That's one of the reasons that, you know, Coombe, when we talk to a lot of the players in baseball today, I'm talking about active players, why yoga has become so popular with veteran players in order to make sure the body is more flexible to handle those uncomfortable, unnatural movements that baseball requires in order to consistently do it at a high level.
I thought the Cubs did a great thing, and I hope they bring it back. I know some of the people have been let go, but remember Christine Z, who was on our plane? She was our Pilates instructor, and they built a Pilates studio in our clubhouse. And I'm a firm believer, as you need to have power, right? All the sports need power. So you've got to get in the weight room. You cannot think that you can stretch yourself into continuing to being a major league athlete. You have to have strength, and that's weight room strength. But you also have to be flexible to maintain the positions, as you're saying, Zach, that you get put in a compromising position on the field, whether you're playing third base and reaching for ball, diving, throwing, whatever the case may be. So you need power. But I thought that flexibility, the yoga and Pilates, I thought were very important for our guys, and I thought it really helped them. So I hope this season at the Cubs, you know, if it's not the same people that we had, which I thought were very good, I hope we find some other people that can help these guys. I would have laughed at it when I was a player back 25 years ago. But after about the first week, I would have went, yeah, I'm a believer. This works. And I would have done it every day. I would have been right in there doing it because I've done it since I've retired. And I think it's a big positive for the guys to help them stay on the field.
You know, Coombe, too, when you look at a football organization and when they get things started, they provide a great educated diet for these guys, whether they're young or old, and they can change and re-sculpt their body no matter what position, how big, small, whatever the case is. In baseball, do they provide that opportunity for these young guys who this may be the first time they get to eat this well with this regularity? And because sometimes when you take that away from them, that is, you know, and it's a game changer too in some of these young guys.
That's a concern, Tommy. There's no doubt. The way that the players in the major leagues have been, how that has been changed, their treatment and their, not only from the physical side with trainers and therapists and all of that, and these Pilates and yoga, as Zach was talking about, and strength coaches, but also having a nutritionist. And the Cubs sending food ahead or making sure that certain food comes to the clubhouse and they eat properly night after night. Now that guys have been on their own, and I'm not talking about the Rizzos and Bryants and Haywards and, you know, and Schwarbs. They're pretty set. But these young guys, you know, they're expected to eat properly and do all that. Well, it's provided very well. You know, I that's a tough one. I don't know if they will continue that if it's not provided. Not that they don't have the means to do it, but, you know, at 10 o'clock is McDonald's and you haven't eaten, is McDonald's the option? Or are you going to the grocery store and getting a nice salad with some avocado and a chicken breast? I know where I was going at 22.
Me too.
Double Z, you might have been the one guy who would say, would go get some salmon and something nice, and we'd have been hanging out together, and I'd have been jamming a Big Mac down my neck. It's just the way it is.
Thankfully, they do have some better options at the fast food joints.
We do. Yeah.
At least these days, and not when you played. By the way, on a serious note, so Kenny Rosenthal is reporting, quote, in a letter to Tony Clark today, Rob Manfred said, quote, I really believe we are fighting over an impossibility on games. Says, given need to relocate teams from Florida, earliest players could report is June 29th, leaving 66 days to play 60 games. And Hall of Famer Jason Stark writes, so at this point, the sheer math of the calendar says it's no longer possible to play 70 games without extending the season into October and postseason into November, which MLB has been adamant it will not do. So we are looking at a very short regular season if they do play baseball in 2020, Coom.
Yeah, the math, that's what we were talking about earlier without explaining it too much. When you see some of these facilities and guys can't use them if they were going to go to Florida or Arizona or even the home facilities. I mean, we've seen that too. So there's been outbreaks everywhere. You know, 3 days off in a month. I mean, we do it, but, you know, I know they wanted to have a few more days off per month in this system, but it may not work. The season may end up going a couple days longer than maybe the owners would have liked. And when I mean a couple, I mean just a few, under a handful, to give just a few more days off. But, you know, at this point in time with the outbreaks happening, right, you try to get out there and do the best you can do. I can't imagine us playing more than 60 games. It just doesn't seem feasible. Yeah.
All right. When we come back, we're going to do a lot of listening and we're going to do a lot of laughing. That's because Chicago's very own, the actor, comedian, Tom Dreesen will join us. Coom is here. Thayer is here. I'm Zach Zaidman. This is Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. Alongside 85 Bear Tom Thayer, I'm Zach Zaidman, joined for the entire hour by Cubs radio man Ron Coomer. And we're just a few moments away from saying hello to longtime entertainer, Chicago's very own Tom Dreesen. But before we get to that, Coom, you're headed for the big lights, the bright lights of the Mully and Haw show tomorrow. Am I right?
We are. We are going to host with Michael first thing tomorrow morning at 5 o'clock. So, Zach, I expect you to be up and at 'em bright and early and listening to our show at 5 a.m. No, but I'm looking forward to it. I always like being on. I'm on every Friday, most of the baseball season, with Mully and David. And so those guys we're going to host tomorrow like you did last week, and I look forward to it. We'll have some good baseball talk, and keeping our fingers crossed, we will have a deal by then, and we'll be able to talk to some positive, about some positive things that are going on. So that will be good, and we got some surprise guests, so that could be pretty good too. I'm looking forward to that. So we'll see. Yeah, should be good.
I don't know if you had a chance to watch the Belmont yesterday. Did you at all?
I was out and about yesterday, so I did not.
Have you been on the links at all lately? Because
there is a much better chance of me being on the links than there were of me watching the Belmont yesterday. Yes.
Because I saw the highlights of the Belmont, obviously, and I've seen highlights of some of the golf that's been played, and that's cool. That's nice. You know, there's some soccer from Europe that's been on the TV. You know, so there's the Korean baseball that's been on the air in the wee hours of the morning. The Japan League has gotten started. But here, coast to coast, what unites us as sports fans are our major sports. And we haven't had that yet. And I just hope that from a health standpoint, we can do this, because you mentioned the uptick in cases that's occurred down south in Florida, in Arizona, in Texas, in California. And while the numbers in the state of Illinois are very encouraging, Coombe, you know, when you talk about professional sports, you can't live in a bubble unless you actually do what the NBA is trying to do with the travel and the fact that you're taking on teams from different regions. We need the entire country to be on the same page in terms of fighting this virus. If not, I don't know how we do this successfully from a sports standpoint.
Yeah, I was listening to what you guys were talking about earlier today on the show and some of the thoughts, and I would have to agree. I think the one thing that the union is doing right now during this time of when you're trying to finalize an agreement is making sure that all the protocols are in place that you can have to keeping everybody healthy and safe when we go back to playing. So that's the one thing that they're trying to do to really button all that up and get it to the best that you can possibly do. So I'm sure there's a whole boatload of people trying to make sure testing and all of those things are being set up at a ballpark or how they're going to set it up. But Zach, I have to agree with what Tommy was saying. When you think about it, there's just no way to be certain that you can take care of it all. So, you know, you're right. Guys are going to have to really watch. I know Major League Baseball is going to do everything in its power once you're out there to protect you, but you're going to have to be diligent with what you do personally. You know, whether that be wearing a mask, whether it be not, you know, getting out too much socially and interacting too much to where you're in confined spaces with a bunch of people. And you're just, you know, the people that you're around that you know aren't positive, you can stay with them, but you're just going to have to watch. And you know, I think for the next few months and maybe for just the rest of this season for baseball, and I'm sure for football guys too, they're all concerned about this uptick too. Everybody's got to be diligent and taking care of themselves and protecting themselves. And if everybody does that, you got a much better chance of at least getting this season off and running and hopefully we play.
All right, let's have a little fun because it's been real heavy listening to that. And hopefully we can get sports really soon and that'll be entertaining. But in lieu of the lack of sports, why not just bring on someone who is a great entertainer and a great sports fan and a good talker and a friend of the show. Zach Zaidman, Tom Thayer, Ron Coomer with you. And we're not the biggest names right now on the score. That's because joining us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Tom, would you like to introduce our special guest?
Well, a Chicagoland hero, Chicagoland sports fan. Actually, Gary, Indiana, I think, wasn't that it? But our good friend, comedian, book writer, actor, just an all-around great guy, our good friend, Chicagoland's own Tom Dreesen. Big Tom, how are you today?
Hey, Ron, Tommy, Zach, and Ron. It's Harvey, Illinois. How could you ever forget that there? Harvey, Illinois. That's my hometown.
Tommy,
and by the way,
excuse us. We're around that Joliet area, so, you know, the water's a little different there. It's a
by the way, you failed to mention one thing. A great athlete. I once hit a home run over Tom Thayer's head in Las Vegas, Nevada, in a stadium, and he'll tell you that's the truth.
He actually hit two over my head. So we're playing in one of those rocks and jocks game in Las Vegas, and I'm playing in the outfield, and Dreesen comes up the bat. You know, what are you, Tom? Like 5'3", 140?
No, I'm 5'9", 150.
And he crushes a softball twice over my head in this baseball park in Las Vegas, and as he's surrounding the bases, I'm still chasing the baseball, and he's singling and shaking and waving his arms to the fans. I'm glad you remember that. I do remember it as one of my greatest sports letdowns, but you did it.
I had such great times, Zach and Ron, with Tom and the 85 Bears. I went to the Super Bowl and flew back with them in the jet, and you know, and just had a wonderful time. That's a great group. In the meantime, Tommy, Jim McMahon texted me this morning, but I told him I was going to be talking to him. He said, oh, tell him I said hello. And I want you to know, you should be on his text mail because he sends some of the greatest porn that I've ever seen in my life. They're going to lock him up soon. They're going to throw a net over him and lock him up.
Well, you know what? Hey, listen, Jim hasn't really strayed very far away from the way he was as a football player. He's as crazy as you get, so it doesn't surprise me. I'm more surprised that you're out there in the social media highway just fluting there with all the guys still.
It's just amazing, you know, how I can stay in touch with everybody. It's just great. I got to say, one of the reasons why Chicagoans love Jim McMahon, and one of the reasons that why they love Harry Carey and Mike Ditka, I'll say, because what you see is what you got. What you see, there was no two Jim McMahons or two Harry Careys or two Mike Ditka. What you see is what you got. That's who they were, you know, right or wrong. It doesn't matter whether you agreed with them or not. But that's why Chicagoans, I think, love them. You know that there wasn't two sides of them. It's the same thing, right or wrong, the same thing.
Tommy, I got a question for you.
Sure.
What was more fun? You've been on a lot of private jets in your day. The Bears jet coming home from the Super Bowl after winning, or being on a jet with your buddy Frank Sinatra and your buddies on a private jet as you're going into Chicago, out of Chicago, into Vegas, out of Vegas. I don't even know if we can tell some of those stories on our air. I mean, we might have to have a glass of wine somewhere else to do that. What would be better?
What you can do, you can, and boy, this is a cheap plug. You set me up. This is like a being in a comedy team. You set me up with a great punchline. You can hear all those stories when you buy Still Standing, My Journey from Streets and Saloons to the Stage and Sinatra. Just go to Amazon. I just got a book out a week ago, and all those stories are in there. And but to answer your question, you know, the Bears thing was a one-time thing, and of course, you know, as a Bear fan all your life, there's no describing what that was like. But it wasn't even a close game, and I hung out with the guys the week before they played that game, and there wasn't a doubt in any of their minds that they weren't going to win that game. And I've never seen a more relaxed team. They went into that game against Boston knowing they were going to kick butt, and they did, you know. So that was fun.
Did Thayer make curfew, Tommy, any of those days the week before the game?
Did Thayer do what?
Did he make curfew before any of those days before the game?
No, we chased... Me and Thayer and Tim Reitman went out a couple nights. Tommy will tell you. There's a couple stories I can't even tell you.
That's what I mean.
I can't tell you. I can tell you when we were hanging in a bar somewhere. I probably could tell this on the air. I better not tell. I'll wait for another time. But hanging with Frank, you know, the whole book is about a little boy. The story is basically this. A little boy from Harvey, Illinois, had eight brothers and sisters, lived in a shack. We had no bathtub and no shower and no hot water. Raggedy poor, holes in my shoes my whole childhood. It's a little boy with his shoeshine box at 8 years old, going tavern to tavern in the snow, shining shoes to raise money to help feed his brothers and sisters, and hearing Frank Sinatra on the jukebox in those bars in Harvey, Illinois. And one day, that boy carries Frank Sinatra's coffin out of a church in Beverly Hills, California. So it's the journey, that journey that I take the audience on, the readers on in my book, and a lot of fun stories, but a lot of being knocked down and getting back up again, getting knocked down and getting back up again. Being part of America's first black and white comedy team, Tim Reed and I were America's first black and white comedy team, and history shows we were the last. From 1969 to 1975, what it was like touring the nation, not unlike it's now. I mean, there were riots, race riots all over the United States, and there were students protesting the Vietnam War. I just got out of the service, and Tim just got out of college. And we toured the nation trying to make people laugh, not lecturing, just trying to make people laugh. We did 11 prisons in 1 year. We would go anywhere there was racial tension, colleges, high schools, and just trying to make America laugh. And what we endured during those years, all that's in the book. And, you know, when the team split up and, you know, me going on the Tonight Show and it changing my life, you know, overnight, you know. And then there's a great chapter in there about the Cubs. And every year, Jim Fry would let me be bat boy for the Cubs. And I would go to Wrigley Field. They let me hit batting practice and run the bases in those days. And then be bat boy for 4 or 5 days. and the fun I had with Rick Sutcliffe and how he used to pull tricks on me all the time. There's just a lot of fun in the book. You know, a lot of heartache, but a lot of fun.
You know, it's funny because me, Tom Dreesen, Tim Weigel, Sutcliffe, Mark Grace, and Jay Hilgeberg, we did the game show Win, Lose, or Draw for a week, which was funny. But that wasn't the greatest event that Tom Dreesen introduced me to in my life, because he introduced me to Frank Sinatra in his dressing room, behind stage, and dinner after the event. It was probably the most memorable moment in my life, and I've luckily enough been to the White House and have won a Super Bowl. Tom, my question to you is, who's the biggest person Frank Sinatra has ever introduced you to?
Wow. I mean, I performed for four presidents, five in my lifetime, but with Frank. I also, Pavarotti and Gregory Peck and Kirk Douglas and Clint Eastwood. Frank introduced me to Clint Eastwood, and we're friends to this day. In fact, I just talked to him half an hour ago, but we're buddies to this day. I would go to his home down in Rancho Mirage and hang out with him. He had a huge compound, and that on the outer perimeters of his compound were bungalows called New York, New York, Strangers in the Night, Tender Trap, My Way, named after his songs. And in those bungalows would be house guests, Gregory Peck and his wife Veronique, Kirk Douglas and his wife Anne, Robert Wagner and Jill St. John, Jack Lemmon and his wife Felicia, and you know, and Clint Eastwood and whoever he was dating at the time, and which was always wow. A lot of fun too. And we would hang out till 3-4 in the morning, you know. I'll tell you a quick story. One time, Frank was with Luciano Pavarotti, and they're in the dressing room, and Pavarotti was a huge fan of Frank Sinatra. It's one of those interesting things. And Frank, of course, of Pavarotti. And Frank, people were watching them two talk, and Frank asked Luciano Pavarotti a question, a technical singing question that I didn't quite understand, but he was saying to him, Luciano, tonight during your aria, there was a moment where, and he started to describe how he took it up an octave and did this, or and he said, how did you do that? And everybody got quiet in the dressing room. And Pavarotti thought about it, and he said, I don't know. I just open my mouth, it comes out.
And there you have it.
I love it,
right?
And Frank was looking for, I held my breath, I took a deep breath, I put my diaphragm, he was looking for some technical answer. Frank fell on the floor laughing. He was looking for that real serious scientific answer to that question, you know.
Hey,
but by the way, the night I took Thayer and Tim Reitman and I forgot who else, two Kelly Mondellis to meet Frank Sinatra after the show. And I told Tommy and I told Tim Reitman, I said, Frank doesn't take the strangers immediately, but after a while he'll relax into it. So if he seems a little quiet at first, it's because he's always was real cautious around strangers. But after dinner was over, he got the like in the guys, Tommy and Tim, and now Frank starts to tell Tom Thayer and Tim Reitman a story. And I went, wow.
Hold on, hold on. Okay. We have to take a commercial here, and I want people to stick around because I want to hear this story when we come back on the other side of this commercial break. Man, this is getting interesting each second. Tom Thayer is here. Ron Coomer is here. I'm Zach Zaidman, and Tom Dreesen is with us. More on Tom Thayer's dinner with Frank Sinatra when we come back on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Zach Zaidman and Tom Thayer on 670 The Score, a radio.com sports station.
And we're joined by a couple of heavy hitters, including Cubs radio man Ron Coomer, as well as entertainer and more. He's an author, he's a comedian, he's an actor. Tom Dreesen from Harvey. Tom, he's from Harvey. I just want to make sure you don't forget.
I know
but when
that.
We, but right before the break, Tom Dreesen was beginning to tell a story of you, Tom Thayer, meeting Frank Sinatra at dinner back in the day. And Tom, I'm so sorry we had to take the commercial break, but now the floor is yours. Please do tell how the dinner went between Sinatra and Thayer. I'm interested in this.
Well, what happened was, as I say, we went to Kelly Mondelli's, which was on Clark Street in those days. Now it's a restaurant. Joey Mondelli still has it. I think it's called Escaro, but it's not on Clark. But anyhow, so afterward, as I was explaining, that Frank was, I told Frank and, I mean, Tom Thayer and Tim Reitman that Frank is a little shy around strangers all the time, until he got to know you. And Frank was shy at first, but after dinner, he now loosened up and started liking the guys, you know, and so he was going to tell them a story. And Reitman sitting right in front of Frank and Tom sitting behind Tim Reitman, Tom Thayer. And so Frank starts to tell this very interesting story about when he first started out in his career and how he grew up in Hoboken. And he's getting to the story, Tim Reitman's looking over Frank's shoulder. He's not looking Frank in the eye. He's looking over Frank's shoulder. There's a girl at the jukebox, a tall blonde. In the middle of Frank's story, when he was getting right to some interesting part, Reitman stood up without saying excuse me and walked away from Frank and started hitting on the girl at the jukebox. So Frank turns around and he sees what he's doing. And he said, I hope he scores. You know, I said, I think he's more interested in the girl than your story, Frank. And he said, well, I hope he scores. And Thayer said, he scores more there than he ever does on the field.
Well, that was a sidewinder compliment to Reitman, you know, at that day and age, because, you know, here we are sitting at Medelli's having the thrill of a lifetime being a part of a dinner with Tom Dreesen, Barbara Sinatra, Frank Sinatra, and Reitman gets up because he's attracted to the waitress playing Put Money in the Jukebox. So,
what'd you learn, Tom Thayer, what did you learn from Frank Sinatra that night?
He's got great stories. He's a storyteller, and when he starts telling stories and he's including people's names, they're people that you've known of from history, whether they're a great actor, a comedian, a beautiful singer, whatever the case is you're listening to one of the most interesting men in the world at that time, and you never thought that you'd be sitting in that seat. So, like, I remember it like it was yesterday, because I was getting ready to go to Las Vegas for the first time in my life. And I had mentioned that, let me tell you something about Las Vegas. And then goes on to tell a story, you know, an actual account story of his time in Vegas, Tom.
Well, you know, the one thing Frank Sinatra was that we Chicagoans are, by and large, is he was a hangout guy. He loved to hang out. After the shows, that's what we did. He never went to bed till the sun came up. So whether we were on the road or off the road, when the sun came up, Frank went to bed, and he'd hang all night long, get a little Jack and a Splash and a pack of Camels, and that's what he did. And he wanted you to hang with him. But when he was the great Frank Sinatra, without a doubt, this incredible career this man had, you know, I mean, 1,431 times into the recording studios, over 100 albums, over 1,200 original songs written just for him, Academy Awards, Grammys, Emmy, all these things. But when you hung out with him late at night, he became a kid from Hoboken, you know. And one of the things I'll always treasure, we were at a restaurant in New York City called Patsy's on West 57th, and we were hanging out late after the shows, and a reporter from the New York Times who had done a story on me a while back, and he was walking out, and he stopped by to say hello, but he said to Frank, why do you keep Tom Dreesen with you? And all these years, and Frank said, you mean besides the fact that he's funny? And the guy said, yeah. He said, well, he said, if I'm a saloon singer, and I am, then Tommy's a saloon comedian. And by that, I mean, we're just a couple of neighborhood guys. And I've always treasured that quote. He put it in the paper, but that's what Frank was off the stage when he got to know you. And he really was careful around strangers because he had been burnt so many times. But when he got to know you, he became a kid from Hoboken and with a lot of good stories. You know,
but, you know, that was the great thing about the two of you guys, Tom. You guys fit perfectly together. Your act didn't do anything to compete with what Frank was going to do. And I think that was the perfect relationship that the audiences, over the number of times that you performed with them, that's what they appreciated out of the whole night's events.
Yeah, opening for Frank Sinatra is a challenge that it's hard to describe to any comedian or anybody. You guys are public speakers, so you know what I'm talking about. But I would say if I was saying to Zach, you're You know, if there's 20,000 people out in the arena. Now, we did this 45, 50 cities a year. There's 20,000 people out in that arena, Dallas, New York, wherever you were, Chicago. There's 20,000 people in the arena, Zach, and I want you to go out there, and for the next 45 minutes, I want you to stand in the middle of them. They're in the round. Stand in the middle of those 20,000 people, and I want you to hold their attention for the next 45 minutes. One more thing, I want you to hold their attention. I want you to make them laugh for the next 45 minutes. Oh, one more thing, Zach. I want you to make them laugh when you want them to laugh. I want you to pull the strings on the emotions of 20,000 people. No props, no tricks, no charts, no special arrangement, no orchestra, nothing but you and 20,000 people. And one more thing, Zach. Not one of them came to see you.
Well, I can tell you, and I think Coom would agree, Zach would be replaced very quickly.
It's a good thing I could hit. That's all I got to say. Tommy, I got a question for you. When was it that you, so you're doing your act and you're traveling around our country and, you know, you're a guy from Harvey, Illinois, and all of a sudden, you know, you do Carson and you do, when was it though that you connected with Frank and all of a sudden there's this bang and it clicks and now there you go and you're going to be, you know, because before you did the act for him, there had to be that introduction period of you guys hanging out and becoming buddies, neighborhood guys, so to speak. When did you know all of a sudden, God, I'm in the circle with Frank? That's just the way it is.
When he invited me to his home the very first time, after I'd been with him about 6 months, he invited me to spend some time down in the home in Rancho Mirage in the desert. And I went down there and you know, spent a week down there. But one night, because he hung out till dawn every night, one night at around 3:30 in the morning, he came to my bungalow. He said, "Hey, Tommy, let's take a ride, if you don't mind." And I got up, and I got in the car, and I drove him around the desert till the sun came up. And he opened up to me that night, and I to him. But after that night, I just knew that, and I'll tell you a story. And by the way, it's in the book. Excuse me. He told me that night something very personal. And after he told me that story, he said to me, "I shouldn't have told you that." And I said, "Well, it won't go any further than this car." He said, I know, but I shouldn't have told you that." I said, "Well, it's not like we're strangers. We're friends, and it won't go any further." And what made me do it, I don't know, but I looked at him. I was driving back toward the compound. I looked at him, and I said, "Strangers in the night, exchanging glances." He said, "Oh, my God, if you're going to sing that song, at least get in key." You know, so he starts singing. He starts singing to me, "Strangers in the night, exchanging," and I'm saying, "Wondering in the night, what were the chances?" And we were doing the song back and forth. Now, we pull into the compound, and the security guard let us in and everything. He gets out of the car, and he always would sock me on the jaw. He'd say, "Love you, pal." He'd give me like a little sock. He said, "Love you, pal. Good night, Tommy." I said, "Good night." And I was going back to my bungalow, and I was thinking, if I went back to Chicago, and I was telling all the guys back in Chicago in some bar, "Gee, I was just riding around with Frank, and we were singing Strangers in the Night," they'd say, "Get the hell out of here, will you?" But it happened, and it's a moment I'll never, ever forget. And from that point on, we were closer. When I first started touring with him, he was the boss of the tour, of course. The great Frank Sinatra, this was his tour, and he, "You better do your job," because he did his, and he knew the job, and he knew everybody's job, and everybody had to show us perfection. That's what he wanted. But later, he was my boss. Later, he became like a buddy, and at the end of his life, more like a father to me, and taught me so many lessons, so many things that I do to this day.
Well, you know, it's kind of a weird story. I was thinking of Father's Day while you were saying that, Tom, and you think about the impact that so many of these guys have on everybody's lives. And what was the age difference between the two of you? Because when you talk about a guy that has a fatherly impact on you throughout your time and your career and your existences, what was that age difference?
He was 30 years older than me, you know, and so in a lot of ways I was like a son to him, and he had a son, and they have a strange relationship. But I'm a street kid. I don't have a degree from academia. I got a doctorate from the street. I grew up on the streets. From the time I was 8 years old, I was on the street, shining shoes and taverns, setting pins in bowling alleys, caddying in the summertime, selling newspapers on the corner. I was a high school dropout. At 16, I dropped out of high school. I went in the Navy when I was 17, got a high school diploma in the Navy, and went to junior college nights and everything. But he was that kind of guy. He was a street kid, you know. And So we had to. I have three children, a girl, boy, girl. He had three children, a girl, boy, girl. I'm Irish and Italian. I'm half Sicilian. He was half Sicilian, you know. We had a lot of commonality, you know. I remember one time he told me, he said, Sicilians don't cry, Tommy, in public. They cry alone. I said, but I'm half Irish. He said, well, Irish cry when they change bus drivers.
Hey, here's a Scottish-Irish guy you're talking to. There's a great foreword in the book. So when I knew you were going to be on today, Tommy, I started, you know, doing a little research. The foreword in the book. So, you know, not only has your life, professional life, been around Frank Sinatra, but when you have people like David Letterman writing the foreword for your book, last time I checked, that's pretty good. That won't happen if I ever write like this, you know, Reader's Digest version of Who Grew Up on the South Side of Chicago for Ron Coomer. But David Letterman's foreword is outstanding, and he talks about your friendship together and how you met at the Comedy Shop in Los Angeles. It's great writing, but, you know, the people that they mention in this, you know, it's the who's who of Hollywood through all of our lifetimes. It's just incredible.
Yeah, David, I'll tell you a real quick story, and it has to do with Illinois. You'll love this. But Letterman said to me a while back, he said, Tom, this is about 2 months ago, he said, Tom, every time I do an interview or you do an interview and people say, how did you meet? We tell the same story. You were on stage at the Comedy Store my first night in L.A. I saw you perform. You came off stage, and I complimented you on your set. And I said, yeah. He said, well, that's a boring story. I said, well, it's the way it happened. He said, I don't care. It's boring. From now on, tell people that you came off stage, and I was in the parking lot, and I had stolen some material from you, and you beat the hell out of me in the parking lot. I said, now, why would I want to tell that story? He said, because it's a better story. So 2 weeks go by, and he called me. He said, hey, do you know the governor of Illinois? I said, no, I met him, but I don't know him. He said, well, I have a problem. His wife, Regina, knew a woman in Chicago who had an autistic son, an adult, and there was some farmland or something that the autistic adults planted corn and beans and stuff, and when it came into fruition, they gave it to the homeless. And supposedly the state was going to take that away. I need some help. I said, oh, you know, I can help you. I know the Senate Majority Leader, John Cullerton. You know, I said, I know him, and I'll call him. And long story short, I hooked them two up. And John said, don't worry, tell Dave we're working on this and we're going to help him. I said, John, would you tell Dave that? He said, yes. I gave him the number. And I said, oh, by the way, John, will you tell Dave the only reason you're helping him is because Dreesen beat the hell out of him in the parking lot at the Comedy Store. He said, okay, I'll tell him that. Now, 10 minutes go by and my phone rings and it's Dave. I said, hello. He said, didn't I tell you that's a better story? I told you that's a better story.
Great stuff. Tom Dreesen, thank you so much for entertaining us for the last half hour. Really appreciate your perspective, your stories, and great luck with the book going forward.
Well, thank you very much. I love Chicago, and the book is a lot about, you know, being a kid from the South Side and what Chicago means to me. So, you know, thank you, guys. Tommy Thayer, I hope to see you soon. Who knows what's going to happen, but I hope to see you soon. My best to your family.
Thank you. Thanks for coming on, Tom.
Okay, guys. Take care.
Take care, Tommy.
You too. Yep. Be healthy. Stay safe. Comedian, entertainer, actor Tom Dreesen sharing some laughs with us here on The Score. We've got to wrap things up. Got a lot of people to thank, including Dan Weider, Ron Coomer, who spent the entire hour with us. And don't forget, if you want more Coom, tomorrow morning, 5 o'clock, right here on The Score, he's filling in for David Haw on the Mully and Haw Show with Mike Mulligan. Tom Thayer, thank you so much for adding your expertise over the last 3 hours. Our executive producer has been Jordan Malley. I'm Zach Zaidman. Happy Father's Day, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. This is Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.